Welcome back to the WFO Life Podcast. I'm Dr. William Curtis, and today we're going to talk to you about the 30 ways that people fail. Now, normally, we are like to talk about mastering self, mastering craft, and accomplishing any mission. But sometimes it's useful to look at the reasons people fall short, the various ways that we fail. And today we're going to use Napoleon Hill's classic self-help book, Think and Grow Rich. I think you're going to enjoy this one. We're going to do it in a two-part series. We're going to do the first 15 today. Listen in and enjoy. And now, the bumper music. Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission. Good evening, Chris. How are you today?
Doing great. Feeling energized.
Excellent. Well, it was a busy day at clinic today. We actually had a surge of COVID-19 that finally hit our community, and we're starting to see, I guess, a secondary wave of activity. So we're starting to see a lot of people coming in, reporting illness, reporting contacts with people that have been ill. Fortunately, everyone that I've come across, which has been a fairly large number of patients, my team, I should say, most of them have been mild illnesses, so I'm happy that, you know, I knew this was coming. You know, that's kind of part of the whole flattening of the curve thing, is that what would happen is you would see a secondary wave or ripple effect, if you would. And I think that's all we're seeing in our community. So I think it's normal, and I think it's just, you know, part of the evolution of this whole virus running its course through the population. So it's kind of interesting times, and it was amazing. It was kind of like flu season. It hit just like flu season. It was like flu season's like one day you're like normal seeing patients, the next day you're ultra busy and everybody's calling and everybody's sick. That's kind of what it feels like right now.
So you had confirmed COVID patients?
Yes.
You're saying?
Okay. Absolutely. Yeah, like, absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of people are being confirmed, and then we're running across a lot of patients that, well, I was around that person. What do I do now? You know, a lot of that kind of thing.
But most of them have you had any that maybe weren't in perfect health that have still been tolerating it pretty well?
Or? Yeah, I have a couple. One that I treated just yesterday that was acutely ill with known COVID, and I've been following that case day by day. They're at home quarantining, and so far they're doing okay. They've got a mild cough, and you know, all the symptoms are very minor, comparatively speaking, nothing worrisome for hospitalization. So far so good, and like I said, most of the people I've run across have been sort of like flu-like for one day, you know, how you feel achy, body aches and things like that, and then sort of resolves into this sort of cough and, you know, things like that over the next couple of days. That's what I've seen thus far, but it's still early in the whole phase. So we'll just see how it goes. I imagine what's going to happen is we'll have about a week and a half of this, and then it'll sort of fade away again.
Yeah, I was listening to another podcast or a radio program today, and they had a doctor on, I think was a UK-based doctor, and he said, like anything like this, as time goes on and they study it more in more detail, they're finding that because some other flus and, you know, cold viruses are coronaviruses, they're finding that some of the people that have very mild or no symptoms have some, I guess what they're calling, kind of T-cell immunity, right, where their body has been, it's almost like a mild inoculation, I guess is what they're saying. Hey, your body has been exposed to some coronaviruses, so therefore, you know, it can identify and kill this without, you know, becoming like a systemic disease, like some of the people are, you know, seeing go on where they're becoming, you know, having sepsis, you know, because of all their body's negative responses. So that's good, right, that, you know, some people have immunity to it.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a natural herd immunity for a lot of people, but it's still going to run through the population. There's still people at risk. You know, certainly those folks that have other medical issues or are at high risk, they're going to need to be careful, social distancing, masks, hand washing, all the things we've talked about in other episodes. Mm-hmm. Chris, that's before good. We get into the main topic today, which I'm excited about, it's the 30 major causes of failure as proposed by Napoleon Hill in the book called Think and Grow Rich. I'm really looking forward to this. I want to put a shout out to all of our listeners and a thank you. That's because we blew past 10,000 downloads this last month. It feels like we hit some kind of milestone to me. 10,000 downloads seems like a lot. I also noticed that we've been downloaded in 39 different countries.
Blows my mind.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I just think it's crazy that the power of the interwebs and the power of just messaging. And I wanted to thank all of our listeners and supporters of the show. You know, you and I started this with a goal of delivering content that was positive, encouraging, and actionable for that matter. And we've had and met so many amazing people, had so many great guests on. I wanted to thank, you know, Sebastian Giraldo, John Sullivan, Amy Acuff, Bill Lathrop, Gary Collins, Jerome Dixon, Karen Clark, Rick Cortez, Rex Howes, and recently NFL Man of the Year, Chris Long. It's been a lot of fun interviewing these folks. And then, of course, our ongoing conversations, just like this episode has started, just a couple of guys that are talking about the world and the way we see it and things that we can do to, I don't know, master self, master craft, and accomplish any mission we set our mind to. So anyway, you know, I think that's it's something that it's not us. It's certainly the people that listen to us. But I think it's been a fun ride so far, and I look forward to it. Kind of energized me to see those numbers. So I thought, okay, it's time to buckle up and, you know, keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to say some of the, you know, I guess you'd say more prominent guests we've reached out to, I think the success we've, you know, had will help us to continue to get more interesting guests on the show for everybody listening. So that's
absolutely
exciting.
Absolutely. So today, let's jump into our topic.
Sounds good.
I have been reading Napoleon Hill's book, The Think and Grow Rich. It's kind of the classic edition. Napoleon Hill was an American self-help author. He is best known, and this guy was born in 1883, died in 1970, for those of you who don't know him. His best known book was Think and Grow Rich. It was written in 1937, and it's among the 10 best-selling self-help books of all time. The reason I came across this and wanted to go through this, and I think what's going to happen, I know for a fact I've already got about 10 sections of this book outlined that I think we have to do some type of show on mindset, on self, you know, mastering self, things like that. Mm-hmm. But it's awesome. It's a great book. And if you recall, I think we mentioned this before the show, Rex Howes, who we had on that was our expert in attitude and all of that, this was one of the first books he mentioned. I had already read this, but it was interesting that, you know, that's what got me opening it again is like, hey, Rex mentioned this book. And so I opened it back up, and every morning I've been reading it for the last week or so, and I'm finding all kinds of crazy cool stuff. Today, I found an interesting section that I wanted to review. I think it's going to be a two-part because it's the 30 major causes of failure and how many of those things might be holding you back.
Sounds a little dark, but I'm going to try to make a positive spin on it.
You're going to put a positive spin? Yeah. I don't think it'll be dark because obviously we can put – it's – you know, we do a lot of talk about how you master self, master craft, accomplish any mission. We do things looking for the upside of everything. If you can, how do you maximize any kind of outcome? Well, one of the things I think is important is watch out for what common failures occur.
That's fair enough. And, yeah.
I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be necessarily negative, but I want to start out. So I'm going to read sections of this, and then let's comment on individual ones. So I'm going to read his little intro to this section. Again, not going to read the whole book, but I want to thumb through a few things here. So he starts out, he says, life's greatest tragedy consists of, and this is from Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. Life's greatest tragedy consists of men and women who earnestly try and fail. The tragedy lies in the overwhelming large majority of people who fail as compared to the few who succeed. I have had the privilege of analyzing several thousand men and women, 98% of whom were classified as, quote, failures, end quote. There is something radically wrong with a civilization and a system of education which permit 98% of the people to go through lifetime as failures. But I did not write this book for the purpose of moralizing the rights or wrongs of the world. That would require a book 100 times the size of this one. My analysis worked to prove that there are 30 major reasons for failure and 13 major principles through which people accumulate fortunes. In this chapter, a description of the 30 causes of failure will be given. And as you go through the list, check yourself by it, point by point. for the purpose of discovering how many of these cause of failure stand between you and success. Any thoughts on that before we jump in?
Yeah, the first thing that jumped out at me, I think, was in the first couple lines where he says something about, or at least the way I interpreted it, is that, you know, even though you may analyze these people that are failures, I mean, people, even those people he analyzed, are not setting themselves up to fail on purpose, right? Their events are happening in a lot of cases by not being deliberate, by not being self-aware, by, you know, choosing the wrong people to surround yourselves with. You can, like, subliminally, in a way, set yourself up for failure, even though, you know, in the first couple lines, he kind of alludes to the fact, like, hey, you know, these people didn't, you know, make it an aim or, you know, make it a point to fail. I'm just analyzing after the fact, you know, if you will. So,
yeah, exactly. He's not judging. Nothing judgmental about it at all. Just simply observations of what holds people back, for sure. So let's delve in. And I thought the first one, I would say that the first one, I've read this a few times, and the first one stands out because it's different than the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And his very first one is, number one, unfavorable hereditary background. So this, yeah, a little deep there, but he says this is, I'll go ahead and read his explanation so everybody understands. This is but little, if anything, which can be done for people who are born with a deficiency in brain power. This philosophy offers but one method of bridging the weakness through the aid of a mastermind. Observe with profit, however, that this is only one of 30 causes of failure which may not easily be corrected by an individual. So I think what he's trying to say, remember this was written back in the 20s and 30s, what he's trying to say is that sometimes we just aren't dealt, you know, there's people that just aren't dealt a full deck, if you will. And one of the things that you can do, though, is you can surround yourself with what he calls a mastermind, is what he describes in this book as a group of folks together for a common purpose. Somebody has a strength in one area, somebody has a strength in another, and they pool their resources into a mastermind group to help each other succeed. So I think he's saying that, like, look, okay, we might not all have, you know, everything going for us, you know, but we can surround ourselves with successful people, and all, you know, everyone kind of rises by that association.
Yeah, my quick take on that would be, there's numerous examples, especially it seems like in the world of entrepreneurship, where people that flunk out of school or quit school or don't even graduate high school become multimillionaire magnates. And a lot of times they do it, you know, in other ways, whether it be surrounding themselves with good people, just being wildly hardworking and passionate about, you know, what they want to do, or, you know, being self-aware and say, I'm really good at this, or I'm good with people, so I want to, you know, have a customer service business and I want to own my own business. And so I think that, you know, he's not saying that you're, you know, destined to failure, but I think the I guess the positive spin on it would be that there's tons of examples of people being wildly successful that maybe, you know, weren't straight A students.
Yeah, right on. And, you know, the funny thing about this is I think this goes to all levels, because there's a lot of sharp people, and I would say that I might fall into this category that I got a lot of things going for me academically in certain areas, but there's things that I just don't, I'm not good at. No, there's just a few things I'm not good at, and I don't want to do them. I'm not good at them, and I need to surround myself with people who are willing and able and better talented than me than to solve that problem. And I've got a lot of things like that in my life. One of them might be editing podcasts and stuff.
Yeah.
But it is something I think anyone can take that and say, you know, it is important to surround ourselves with mastermind, you know, that mastermind group, that group of people that are supportive of us. It's kind of like we talked about in the last episode a couple weeks back on tribes. Who we surround ourselves can make a big difference in whether we, you know, succeed or fail.
Absolutely.
So number two. Oh, by the way, I think we should do – there's like 30. I would like to – like break this into two sections. So I'm thinking we're going to do like 15 or so. So we'll go through these. That way we have plenty of time to cover each one.
Yeah, sounds good.
So number two, lack of well-defined purpose in life. And he goes on to say, and this is from a direct quote, there is no hope of success for the person who does not have a central purpose or a definite goal at which to aim. 98 out of 100 of those whom I've analyzed had no such aim. Perhaps this was the lack of, you know, lack of purpose is essentially what he's saying. If you don't have a reason you do anything, that is a major cause of failure. And I think he put that fairly high on the list for a reason.
Yeah, it reminds me, I think I have, you know, in my notes for this show somewhere, there's a quote that says something about if you don't have a destination, then any road will take you there.
Yes.
And so you can see that as an adventure, but you can also see it as like a leaf blowing in the wind. You know, so if you don't,
I think that's from Alice in Wonderland. The caterpillar tells Alice, she says, which way should I go? And it says, the answer is essentially, if you don't mind where you're going, that it doesn't matter which way you go.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people like that because their personality, you know, creative types, artistic, but you still have to have enough goals so that you know on a daily, weekly, yearly basis, you're putting some money in the bank, if you will, to get to that end state, you know, where I think a lot of people wake up, they're 30 years old in their parents' basement, and they're like, what the hell happened? I was going to be somebody,
right.
You know?
Right, right. So, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, back to the book. Number three. Lack of ambition to aim above mediocrity. He goes on to say, we offer no hope for the person who is so indifferent as not to want to get ahead in life and who is not willing to pay the price.
Yeah, that one, I think it's a little bit related to the one before it, but maybe a little bit different twist. So, and I think sometimes people that might be seen as not a type A personality can fall in this category where they're like, hey, you know, I'm just kind of, you know, go with the flow. I want to get by, not get noticed too much. But there's a slippery slope with that if you don't have an ambition to do anything.
Right. Yeah. You know the old saying, if you want to go to the moon, shoot for the stars.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. If you don't shoot high enough, if you don't have enough ambition, sometimes where you land is in the average place.
Yeah, and I think this plays, I think later on he talks somewhat about fear. And so I think a lot of times people are afraid that if I shoot too high, then I'm destined to fail. So I think there's a fear of failure. In fact, Chris Long talked about that, which is crazy from somebody that successful. But it just shows you everybody deals with it on some level.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was an amazing part of that interview. I surprised at how much of a role he said that played in his life. That was interesting.
Yeah, awesome.
Okay, again, 30 major causes of failure from Napoleon Hill. Number four, insufficient education. This is a handicap which may be overcome with a comparative ease. Experience has proven that the best educated people are often those who are known as, quote, self-made, end quote, or self-educated. It takes more than a college degree to make one a person of education. Any person who is educated is one who has learned to get whatever he wants in life without violating the rights of others. Education consists not so much of knowledge, but the knowledge effectively and persistently applied. Men are not paid, not merely for what they know, but more particularly for what they do with which they know.
Yeah, I know that's huge. Yeah, I was going to say, I know that's huge in our line of work where professional reading and what we call PME, professional military education, is mandated. And for a lot of this reason, you know, all of us come in with degrees of, you know, from different fields as an officer. But if you don't, become more well-rounded, I think General Mattis said, you know, you might be 35 years old, but I want you to have a 10,000-year-old mind. And
right.
So, and you don't always get that from your formal education. I don't know how many times where I've been briefing or had a challenging conversation with a superior. And if I hadn't been listening to podcasts, listening to Audible books and things like that, I would have been way less prepared for the directions that the conversation went.
Absolutely. I don't even know what I would do if I wasn't just learning all the time. I don't even know how not to do that. I can't get up in the morning. I mean, we talked about this in the value of, you know, lifelong learning episode early on in our, you know, our series here. But I don't even know what I would do if I just wasn't reading three things at once and studying things and watching podcasts. And I just think it's something that once you go down that road, you realize there's just so much to know, so many interesting takes on anything, and you can let your imagination run wild. You can follow anything you want to. And I think learning and education, as Napoleon Hill points out here, has nothing to do with a college degree. And it also has to do with, you can know all kinds of stuff. I know a lot of professional students, you know, that's just what they do. They go to school and they learn stuff, but the reality is they don't apply it to anything. And I think that's the fault here, insufficient education. But I think there's a subtle secondary failure that kind of slips into number four here, which is the lack of application there.
Yeah, I think that especially now, where there's such this stigma on student loans, and I mean, I know people that got in the military in some ways because they had gotten two master's degrees that were in different fields and were in this perpetual cycle where I can't really get a job in this field right now, but I don't want to pay back my student loans, you know? So if you stay in school, you can keep, you know, kicking the ball down the road. And that's how, unfortunately, kids end up with, you know, 200 grand and debt, and then they get a, you know, $30,000 a year job because they didn't you know, think that through very well. So there is a, I guess, diminishing returns on that.
But, yeah, living in a van down by the river.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody. So number five, I think this is I'll just sit back and listen on this one. Lack of self-discipline. Discipline comes through self-control. This means that one must control all negative qualities. Before you can control conditions, you must first control yourself. Self-mastery is the hardest job you will ever tackle. If you do not conquer self, you will be conquered by self. You may see at one the same time both your best friend and your greatest enemy by stepping in front of the mirror.
Yeah, I think this ties right into the whole purpose of our podcast, right? When we were brainstorming, I guess, our manifesto, if you will, it's no mistake that mastering self is the very first thing, because if you can't get out of your own way, you know, you can't lead other people, you can't be successful. So I think it's amazing how much that is overlooked, you know, whether it be not paying attention to your health, not investing in yourself, you know, getting wrapped up in alcohol and drugs, a bunch of meaningless relationships. There's all kinds of things that self-discipline can help or correct.
You know, sometimes I'm doing two things at once. Right now, I am just thinking about something I would love to work with you on, and I wonder if others would be interested in this. With your leadership background, I would love to have some type of workshop we do on the art and action that improves self-discipline.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be something that would be – I think a lot of people struggle with how do I keep myself disciplined, you know? And I think there's tools and there's strategies and there's – at some point, you just got to take action. But I think that would be something – I don't know. If anybody hears this and thinks that would be something I would be interested in hearing, let us know in the show notes. If we get enough people that are interested in that, you know, give us some feedback. If you're interested in that idea, I think we should put something together. At very least, we'll do a more extended, you know, episode on self-discipline.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was chatting with somebody in our, you know, I think it was either the WFO Life Tribe or just in the general Future Focus Health Network that we've been building. But somebody was asking me, I did a post and they were like, you know, how do you find time? And because I was explaining something about fasting and how I was doing different workouts in that one post I put a few days ago. But she was saying, you know, how do you do it? You know, I have a hard time, you know, doing all that stuff and getting sleep. I said, honestly, I think people would be surprised that there's a lot of stuff that not always on purpose, but that I just don't get done because I prioritize other things. And so I think that if we had this workshop, people would be surprised that, you know, how many things that I literally don't do and I know that I should do, but it doesn't fall into kind of the top five, you know, categories of things that I always want to do every day, which is, you know, work out, you know, get 7 hours of sleep at least, spend time with my family, you know, do everything I need for my professional responsibilities, and a couple other things. So, that's what I told her. I was like, hey, I'm quick to throw things off the plate because it's not a priority for me, which is hard to do, especially if it's an important thing, but it's not critical or it's not in my, I guess, top priority list at that time. So, and that's a tough thing. I mean, I had to get to that point, and I guess some the way it can be construed is just like learning how to say no, or, you know, just being honest, say, hey, I'm not going to get to that, or not being a slave to your email. Or I have my notifications on my phone turned off like 90% of the day. That was something that I don't know how I think some of it came from, you know, some Tim Ferriss, ideology, or, you know, because he's really big on, you know, you check email specific times of the day. And that's a self-discipline thing. It's not some people can say, oh, you're ignoring, you know, if that's important, somebody's going to call you or, you know, get a hold of you another way. But if it's just a text or an email, I mean, how often is something that urgent in the email, even if the title says urgent, you know?
Right.
It's like what's an emergent to you might not be an emergency to you, might not be an emergency to me if it doesn't fall in with my priority categories, which is, you know, self-discipline tool, I guess. So
yeah, absolutely. I'm the same way with emails. I do not look at that as an urgent means of communication.
No.
All right, moving on. Number six, and this one is fairly straightforward. I maybe make a comment on it, but I think it's pretty straightforward. Number six, ill health. No person may enjoy outstanding success without good health. Many causes of ill health are subject to mastery and control. These, the main, are A, overeating foods not conducive to health. Let me add, this is Dr. Curtis's side note, soda, alcohol, processed sugar, okay? B, wrong habits of thought, giving expression to negatives. C, wrong use of and overindulgence in sex. D, lack of proper physical exercise. And E, an inadequate supply of fresh air due to improper breathing. I think I could do a whole podcast on that, those points he made, but they're self-evident. I think there's little to say about them except for if you have bad health, you're going to forever – it's like leaving the dome light on your car overnight. Your battery's not going to want to start in the morning. If you don't eat right, if you have excessive habits, if you are prone to negativity – you notice he threw that in there – lack of physical exercise, inadequate fresh air, all of these kind of things – overindulgences, these are all things that rob vitality, which is energy. If you don't have energy, very difficult to get by and do things successful in the world.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm going to tie that back into number five, right? Because self-discipline is critical to all those, right? Because if you, because I know for me, none of us are perfect, and knowing the things you struggle with is half the battle. And I know for me, late at night when it's quiet and the kids go to bed, if there's crap in the house, like ice cream or, you know, cookies or something, a lot of times, I can make an excuse for it, right? It's like, oh, well, I'll have a big glass of milk with it. So at least, you know, I worked out hard today. I can always use extra protein. You know, it's amazing. it's amazing. Or it's like, you know, ice cream's made out of milk. It's all these bargaining things that happen in your head. But I know for me, I try to just not buy that stuff or just forget that it's there and try to replace it with things. Because nowadays it's incredible. I mean, there's all kinds of, healthy, tasty foods. Like there's we'll see if there'll be a sponsor of ours eventually now that we have 10,000 downloads, but there's a there's a bar called Power Crunch bars that, you know, some people may have heard of, and it's got that texture like a Kit Kat or a Twix or some of those little sugary wafers that, you know, different companies make. And they even have some that are like red velvet, and there's like one that tastes like a Reese's peanut butter cup, but it's like really super low sugar. You know, I think they use monk fruit or stevia, you know, one of the whole food type, you know, sweeteners. And so it's like
three parts Metamucil.
It's like, these aren't those. Yeah. There are some like that where it's like 40% of the day's fiber, you know, or something. And so it doesn't, you know, spike your blood sugar, but no, these are just, it's really just a protein powder, with some texture. And it has, like I said, it's literally, I want to say it's definitely in the single digits for sugar. And it's and it doesn't have a crap ton of ingredients. That's the problem with some of these. I'm sure you've looked at, I'm sure you're a compulsive label reader like right. I am, and you see something, it's like, oh, whole food, and you look at it, but it's got 75 different preservatives and right. artificial sweeteners in it. So I eat nothing with artificial sweeteners, but you know the Power Crunch bars, you can buy them on Amazon, you can buy them at a lot of grocery stores, but I mean a medium size instead of a giant glass of milk, and one of those is way better, you know, for me. And you get a little bit of the, you know, the charge of ice cream or some Oreos. So I would just say you don't have to be completely good. You can always just be better.
Excellent.
Yep.
Back to the book, 30 yep. major causes of failure. And we are on number 7, unfavorable environmental influences during childhood. Quote, as the twig is bent, so shall the tree grow, end quote. Most people have had criminal tendencies acquire them as a result of a bad environment and improper associations during childhood. I think that's true to some extent. You know, some people grow up in an environment that they never had a positive role model, and they don't know what honest, successful people might look like. And yeah. I think I was when I read this, I was thinking about your work with the Travis Mannion Foundation, the mentorship type work that you do there. But yeah. I think this is probably true. This is one of the reasons people – there's a lot of examples of people that overcome negative environments when they're growing up. But it is certainly something that can be a cause of failure.
Yeah, I mean this one is sad in a lot of ways and kind of tugs at your heartstrings. But you know, like you mentioned, one of the major – initiatives that we do with the volunteer organization that I work with is to teach kids about character. And you know, being especially here in a large metro area, I mean there's literally kids that have no, and they've done surveys on it, and that's part of the reason why they invested so much in this, is there's a high percentage of kids that have zero positive adult role models in their immediate family.
So sad. So,
I mean, can you imagine that, you know, a lot of it has to do with mental illness and drug addiction and things
right.
like that. But so it's completely, well, I won't say completely, not the drug addiction, but, you know, mental illness and other things, you know, somewhat out of the control, especially of the kids. And so, I mean, what are you going to do? And unfortunately, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy if you don't have any of those role models. So, like you said, there are a lot of people that can, I guess, use that as a source of strength and say, hey, I went through all this stuff, so nothing in my life, in college or in a job, is going to be harder than, you know, trying to essentially raise myself when I had all this turmoil going on. But I would say the percentages sometimes are low if you start off with like negative influences like that.
I didn't think I was going to talk about this, but I want to add one thing because I ran across this a few times with some patients in recent weeks. And it's the idea, you know, remember this was unfavorable environmental influences during childhood. I have seen people that I've counseled that their upbringing might have been a situation where maybe their parents were divorced or a parent left. And when that parent left, they left the world of the child, meaning they just weren't involved with them anymore. And what's interesting is that people and these children sometimes develop this false sense that there's something wrong with them, or that they're that person that doesn't spend time with them, doesn't appear to show them love anymore, it means that they're unworthy of love. And so they spend a lot of their time believing negatively and falsely that just because someone else made a bad choice or a parent bailed on them, that means that they're not valuable or that they're not valuable to the world, generally speaking. And that is such a complicated problem. I don't want to open that whole can of worms, but it just crossed my mind that if you're listening to this and maybe you had some scenario in the past and you have a lot of negative thoughts about yourself, look at those thoughts, where they come from. And a lot of times what happens is some things when we're as children, people end up in a situation where when they have negative things, they think it means there's something wrong with them. Like they're not worthy of love, they're not worthy of attention. And so they develop these negative thoughts, these automatic negative thoughts about themselves. Please, examine that thought. Don't be afraid to look at that and say, I wonder if this is why I talk to myself negatively that way. I know that this happens. again, I speak with lots of people every week, and this is a common theme, and it's a common human theme that when we're let down, disappointed, or neglected as children, there's often this feeling that we are just not worthy, and it's not true.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me, there was something, you know, going back to, I think, how we kind of opened up this book again to start with Rex House. There's something, I believe, in his book, Attitude, where it talks about even when you have, I guess, quote unquote, good parents, sometimes if the parents are not willing to start to treat you more like an adult, like once you get into preteen and teen years, think about the basic lessons of childhood can sometimes be not good, you know, because the kids, you need them to be quiet. And so you're like, you know, speak only when spoken to, you know, some of these kind of old school golden rules of, you know, childhood, but that only goes so far. So even, you know, when you do have parents there and, you know, maybe they're disciplinarians and they baby you too much, you know, like the helicopter parents in a way, or in, you know, in one case, you know, that's too lax, but, I think in that book, Attitude, he talks about, hey, you know, the lessons of childhood, you know, whether it's through your parents or through your own maturity, you have to get to a place where you realize, put that in its proper context, you know, you have to move on. And I think I came across it's kind of funny, but, you know, to sum up this, there was a Tony Robbins quote, because I think Tony Robbins, you know, big, you know, speaker and self-help guru, I'm sure was an acolyte of folks like Napoleon Hill coming up. And when I was doing some research for this, I came across a Tony Robbins quote that says, you know, if you drive with the rearview mirror, you're going to crash. So, you know, that's a kind of a funny way to sum up a serious topic. But it's true. I mean, if you're, you know, going forward in your life and trying to be successful, and you have this negative worldview because of an unfavorable, you know, environmental influence during childhood, you know, it's not going to lead anywhere good, whether it's, like you were mentioning, those, you know, feelings of inadequacy. Just, you know, realize that, hey, you know, put it in its proper context. You know, it doesn't have to be a self-fulfilling prophecy if you didn't have the perfect upbringing. You know, you can do what you can now from this second forward to try to, you know, get past it. I know that's easier said than done, but you were saying, you know, if people can't get past that, it's not on them. You know, they just need to, you know, get some help to get past it.
Absolutely. Back to the book.
Yep.
Number 8. Procrastination. This is one of the most common causes of failure. Quote, old man procrastination, end quote, stands within the shadow of every human being, waiting his opportunity to spoil one's chances of success. Most of us go through a life of failures because we are waiting for the time to, quote, time to be right, end quote, to start doing because we're waiting, something worthwhile. Do not wait. The time will never be just right. Start where you stand, work with whatever tools you may have at your command, and the better tools will be found as you go along.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one because we have so many distractions now that can cause us to procrastinate, and we don't even realize it, you know? It's, yeah. I mean,
there's a lot of things, too, that you know, there's a saying, I think it's in the military, that they, you know, talk about burning your boats. Sometimes people make all kinds of plans, like all these wonderful plans in their mind, but there's a failure to take action. You cannot move ahead. You cannot get in shape. You cannot lose weight. You cannot get that great promotion or write that book. You can't do any of those things without action. And sometimes taking a little – we were just talking this morning, our coffee conversation this morning, we were just talking about how, hey, I want to start, you know, maybe going to put this, kind of book together we were talking about, and just a little brainstorming project. And one of the things we talked about, start writing. Yeah. Start writing every day. You know, write 1,000 words a day and just start putting stuff on paper, and then we'll refine that into something, you know, that is useful for people.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of the basic rules of nature, you know, with inertia. I mean, you know, object at rest tends to stay at rest. Object in motion tends to stay in motion. So, you know, once you start getting some momentum, It can become a self-fulfilling prophecy in a good way. But yeah, I think I catch myself at this, and I try to, you know, come up with techniques. Like I said, turning notifications off, you know, trying to monitor how much screen time I have, because there, I mean, technology is great, but you think about it, he wrote this book in a time where they had a lot less things that could cause them to not get started. And now, I mean, sometimes it's a huge uphill battle, you know, just to stay on task, because your mind is so inundated with, you know, pretty colors and videos every time, you know, you get stuck in the YouTube vortex, and, you know, you'll never find the end of YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
start, think about this, you know, oh, I don't have a good enough job. I don't make enough money. The gym has been closed down because of COVID-19. I couldn't work out. You know, good food is too expensive. All of these things, these comments, start where you stand, work with whatever tools you may have at your command, and better tools will be found as you go along. If you don't have a solution for everything, good, start somewhere. Start somewhere, and you will find better solutions as you go along. I think that's just, you know, if you don't have all the means at your disposal, what can you do? You know?
Yeah.
I love that part about, you know, just a reminder that just start where you are. Avoid procrastination.
Yeah. I mean, to the excuses, I put a post the other day up and I said something, and, you know, I got some, I'm sure it would touch a nerve with some people, but I said, you know, think about, for most of us, the average car payment that you have. And, you know, especially if you have two car payments, like a lot of households, you know, for like 1 month's worth of car payments, you know, think about how much fitness equipment and, you know, in some cases, even a, you know, a decent treadmill, you know, that you can, you know, put in your house for the cost of like one stinking month's car payment. You know, think about it. You can buy, you know, kettlebells. You can buy, you know, even if you want to go fancy, you could get a Peloton, you know, subscription and everything, and that's still less than a car payment if you divided it out. So there's all these things now that you can do, and people, you know, don't want to invest in their health, just like. You know, it's even more important than retirement. You'll never get to retirement if you don't, you know, invest in your health now. So
number 9 of 30 causes of failure, lack of persistence. Most of us are good starters, but poor finishers of everything we begin. Moreover, people are prone to give up at the first sign of defeat. There is no substitute for persistence. The person who makes persistence his watchword discovers that, quote, old man failure, end quote, finally becomes tired and makes his departure. Failure cannot cope with persistence. Sounds like something Rex Howes would say.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I've seen it, you know, being in a position of leadership for the better part of, well, if you include my civilian career, you know, over 20 years now. And you see it all the time. You know, people that maybe don't have the highest aptitude, or, you know, have some negative parts that we've covered here, you know, not the best background and, you know, maybe not the best genetics, but they're persistent and they work their ass off. And you're going to, you know, zoom past somebody that has a lot more potential just because, you know, you refuse to accept mediocrity. You refuse to, you know, let anything defeat you. So some of it, I think, is a mindset. Like, it sounds simple. It sounds like a cliche. I'm never going to give up, but you can see it in people. You know, when you have two people faced with similar adversity, you know, the one that persists is going to be the one that you want to depend on.
Absolutely. So moving back to the book, number 10, negative personality. There is no hope of success for the person who repels people through negative personality. Success comes through the application of power, and power is attained through the cooperative efforts of other people. A negative personality will not induce cooperation. This is Rex Howes 100%, and this is a huge cause of failure for a lot of people.
Yeah, I was just going over a book. I was listening to it when I was running on a treadmill today. And it's Simon Sinek, who's, you know, written some, you know, incredible books, and he's got a new book. It's called like The Infinite Game, and this reminds me of it. He says something in there. There's a lot of companies that are set up that, because they're so metrics driven and they're so focused on, you know, profit and, you know, getting the brass ring now, they'll a lot of times reward and promote cancerous people because they can meet the goals, right? They'll force their way into making the metrics, but it sucks for the culture because there's something else that I've heard too. It's like people leave managers, people don't leave companies, and so if you have these negative people, it's gonna destroy the culture, even if you have a temporary gain.
It's true in all levels, from the family to friends to coworkers to leadership in a company. And negativity is a real killer, and people like positive and negative poles of a magnet. They repel each other.
Yeah, nobody wants to work for an asshole.
Right, exactly. Number 11, lack of controlled sexual urge. Sex energy is the most powerful of all stimuli, which move people into action. Because it is the most powerful of the emotions, it must be controlled through transmutation and converted into other channels. I don't know. I think this one's pretty self-evident. In my career, I've seen lots of people really get themselves in trouble over sexual indiscretions and just sort of, you know, not thinking with the appropriate anatomy. And so what ends up happening is they find themselves in these situations that get them in trouble, whether that be through, you know, an inappropriate social situation, whether that mean an unwanted pregnancy, or, you know, there's so many ways that people can sort of get themselves behind the eight ball when they don't look at the sexual energy and emotion for what it is.
Yeah, this struck me because, you know, in the military, when a commander gets relieved, especially if it's, you know, lieutenant, colonel and above, the first thing that your mind goes to is some type of sexual indiscretion, because that's one of the first things that can get you fired is, you know, sleeping with a junior person, sexual harassment, you know, God forbid, sexual assault, or, you know, stalking, things like that. But a lot of it can be, you know, tied to, you know, this uncontrolled sexual urges. What I found kind of fascinating about this, where it talks about the transmutation, and I think it gave examples of people that are sometimes high performers, you know, have a high sex drive, but they can channel it into their work somehow. So, you know, I'm going to have to unpack and explore that more, but I thought that was kind of a fascinating way to say it. It's like, hey, you can, you know, be this aggressive person, have a high sex drive, you know, hopefully you have a, you know, committed partner where you can do that and avoid some of the pitfalls we talked about. But I never thought about it like that, but, you know, channeling your sexual energy into, you know, your work. So
that's okay, so I'm no expert here, but let me drop a little Eastern medicine on you.
Yeah.
So one of the theories with energy production, if you look at Eastern philosophy of medicine, is that energy comes from lower sources in the body, okay? Mm-hmm. Sexual energy is just one form of energy. So we're talking about the energy that move your muscles and everything else, right?
Yeah.
It's just one form of energy. So transmuting, in my mind, when I read this, is the idea of, like you said, putting it to use somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Now, there in Eastern medicine, they actually have, practices where they will try to bring up sexual energy, but not for the usage of sex.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are practices and breathing techniques where you practice breathing from deep, deep in the diaphragm and trying to imagine, I guess, energy coming from the pelvis all the way up through the other parts of your body. And this is a way of cycling energy from those sexual organs, because it is one of the most powerful, you know, sources of energy, but not necessarily for the purpose of sex. So there's actually quite a bit of, and I am like, I'm in the kiddie pool when it comes to this. Yeah. I'm a Western trained physician, but I read a lot of alternative stuff. And I have been exposed through my wife to some of the yoga practices and some of the things that the ancient medicines, that kind of the way they deal with energy, and they do talk about using sexual energy as just one other form of energy. There's breath energy and there's all these other things. So it's kind of interesting that he worded it that way, but it is something just on a more practical thing. I mean, the causes of failure, 30 causes of failure. Well, if you can't master this, or if you can't keep these urges in check, and you're getting yourself into trouble over sexual indiscretions or sexual situations, the reality is you're going to cut your success short for sure.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So I'm going to have to explore that more.
Yeah. So number 12, and I think we'll start. Let's stop at 15. I think we're getting close here, and it's good on our timing here. But we got several good ones to cover here. Number 12 is the uncontrolled desire for something for nothing. The gambling instinct drives millions of people to failure. Evidence of this may be found in the study of the Wall Street crash of 1929. Remember, this was fairly contemporary when he wrote this book, during which millions of people tried to make money by gambling on stock margins.
Yeah. I think this type, ties in just deep to maybe the animal part of us being humans, where, I mean, there is like a charge and excitement about, if you've ever, played, table games, or I think the one that's, kind of synonymous with this is the slot machine, where I like playing blackjack and some other games where, there is a possibility if you train yourself that you can up your chances of winning. I like trying to think my way through a problem versus just like randomly pulling a handle. But from what I understand, I mean, the casinos make more money on the slot machines almost than they do anything else. So it's it's like a unfortunate thing. I think you see it too with health, right? I mean, I'm sure you hear about it. It's like, hey, doc, what do you think about this fat burner? Or what do you think about this? there are good supplements, and there are supplements that could help your performance. But I think, taking a magic pill is what people want, and there's almost no magic pills that are legal.
I didn't even think about it from that. It's interesting you brought that up. I didn't even think about this one from that perspective, and you're exactly right.
Yeah,
there is definitely that can be an uncontrolled desire for something for nothing, for sure. Yeah. All right, number 13, lack of well-defined power of decision. Men who succeed reach decisions promptly and change them, if at all, very slowly. Men who fail reach decisions, if at all, very slowly and change them frequently and quickly. Indecision, procrastination are twin brothers. Where one is found and the other may usually be found also. Kill off this pair before they completely hogtie you to the treadmill of failure.
There's a lot in this one. Because there's two sides of the coin, right? Because it talks about, making quick decisions, but then changing your mind slowly, or failure to make a decision and then change their mind too easy. So, I mean, you can have, I think about this organizationally. That's where my mind jumps because in the military, that's one of the things. I mean, you have to make a decision, but there's a difference between tactical and strategic decisions, right? So I think, being too easy or, taking too long, we also talk about paralysis by analysis, right? You don't want to, take so long, admiring the problem is also something we always talk about, that, you're never going to make a decision that leads to a solution. So there has to be and I think another, I'm thinking, this is like rife for military cliches. I mean, this particular topic. And I think I'll leave my observation in the fact that, we're always told a simple plan violently executed now is better than a perfect plan too late.
Right.
So that's the way I think about it.
Number 14, one or more of the six basic fears. These are, again, causes of failure. These fears may have been analyzed for you in a later chapter. They must be mastered before you can market your services effectively. So I jumped ahead because I thought this would, just to better explain this. So he calls the six basic fears the fear of poverty, the fear of criticism, the fear of ill health, the fear of loss of love of someone, the fear of old age, and the fear of death. I think at some point, I've said this before in this, we could do another show just on that. That is, I can tell you, when I read that, there are some deep, deep things I could go into in each of those that I see in humans that I interact with every day, including myself.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I think, another Stoic philosophy related topic, honestly.
Yes,
because
I agree.
I mean, you think about some of the things we've talked about, some of the things we've read about, but the Stoics talked about practicing poverty, because a lot of times what you're afraid of not being able to afford nice clothes or not being able to eat whatever you want, I mean, it's really the perception of it is worse than the actual experience. And,
right.
you know, and so I think that that goes too with fear of criticism. You know, because you talk about rumors and, you know, people second guessing your decisions. And, you know, I think that's why the book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F, was it was a bestseller. And it really not that deep or great of a book, but the concept holds true. It's like, you know, you keep, people would be just completely dishonest with themselves if you never care what anybody thinks, but you can't do it where it like you can't make it a fear. You have to say, hey, there's going to be people that dislike what I do, but if I'm well thought out, if you know, you can only control your intention. You know, just like if somebody's offended by something that was well intended, it's just like, hey, you don't need to tell them to F off, but you can say, hey, you know, I'm sorry you feel like that, but you know, my intention was noble in what I was doing. So you can't always just be paralyzed by, you know, trying to appease everybody, which I think social media is a terrible, another terrible example of, you know, how that, you know, poisons the well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Basically, these six fears of which, you know, we just covered, fear is definitely a reason for failure. Fear of even taking the first step sometimes dooms people in anything they're trying to do. So I think at some point we'll cycle back to that, and we'll do a whole show on fear.
For sure.
Okay, let's do this. Let's have this one be the last one for tonight. We're right at about an hour, and I think this would be a good place to break because there are, again, there were 30 of these, so I think this would be a perfect splitting point here.
Sure.
Let's cover this last one. Number 15 of Napoleon Hill's 30 Reasons for Failure. Number 15 is wrong selection of mate in marriage. This, a most common cause of failure. The relationship of marriage brings people intimately into contact. Unless this relationship is harmonious, failure is likely to follow. Moreover, it will be a form of failure that is marked by misery and unhappiness, destroying all signs of ambition.
Well, this could be another whole topic, too.
Exactly.
yeah,
deep there. There's, I think back, there are so many situations, friends, family, patients that I've treated that this holds true. Just the wrong choice, the wrong match, and into a relationship that causes so much turmoil that, and this is the key part that he mentioned, destroying all signs of ambition. When you're using so much energy and negativity, that steals energy from everything you do. It steals energy from anything productive you're trying to do, whether that be work or projects or something creative. Being in a negative relationship, if you just back up from the idea of marriage, is a real cause of failure. It's just an absolute drain on your energy. And I think, you know, it's a classic cause of failure.
Yeah, I mean, being in a military lifestyle, I mean, this could be a whole master's level thesis because the military especially unfortunately sets people up for failure in this area in a lot of ways because of you know, unpredictable deployments, extended deployments. So you think about it, I mean, marriage is tough enough, and then you get two people to get married you know, early 20s, and God forbid when they're both dual military, I don't know how they do it. But there are a lot of successful ones, but there's, you know, you think about it, normal life stresses are bad enough. And then if every couple of years, your spouse is gone for 8 months or a year, and potentially will lose their life or come back, not the same person. I mean, you can imagine how much, you know, stress that puts on the marriage. So the military has tried to invest some resources in pre-marriage counseling and things like that. But, you know, just to go more specifically on the topic, it's just amazing how, it's just like choosing your friends. You know, we did a big portion of a topic on the people you choose to surround yourself with. And obviously your marriage, your life mate is the most common person that you're going to be with your whole life. So if you mess that decision up, it really has negative ramifications on everything else.
It sure does.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, so we're halfway through, and the next episode is going to be part two of the 30 Major Causes of Failure as written by Napoleon Hill. I've enjoyed this topic. I've been reading this. I think it's been good. Any final thoughts on this before we close out for the day?
No, I mean, I'm glad you came across this, and I like it because, similar to Rex House's books, it's very action oriented. It's very easy to absorb and apply in your life, and so I think that's closely in line with our mission, is to try to give people, you know, not just you know, hokey stuff that they can't apply. I mean, this is real life stuff that they can think about and use to help themselves be better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, you could just read the first 15 and, like, you kind of score that and go, how am I doing in this area? How am I doing in that area? I need to watch out for that. You know, and every one of these you avoid, of course, you're less likely to fail at whatever it is you're trying to do. So I think that's awesome. I guess let's close up by mentioning this is one of our first sort of, like, I don't know, it's not really an ad. It's just it's an invite. Let's call it an invite. Mm-hmm. I would like to make sure everyone knows about joining what we call our WFO Life Podcast Tribe. We have this under an umbrella website called the Future Focus Health Network, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes to make sure that everyone knows how to get to that site. The reason I invite you to that tribe is, A, it's a positive community of folks that listen to our work. It's a place where you can discuss that and other topics and exclusive content with us. And I think it's a place where we would love, Chris and I would love to have our listeners help us meta-learn, you know, accelerated learning through camaraderie, through sharing of information, sharing of ideas, all with the mindset of mastering self, mastering craft, and accomplishing any mission. So if you haven't done that, please go to the show notes, wherever you're listening to this, and click on the link for the Future Focus Health Network or for the WFO Life Podcast Tribe. That's specifically a group within that network. I know it sounds complicated. It's not. It's got a great app that goes with it, so it's a little bit like a social media, sort of, except for all the, you know, positivity and none of the crap. So any thoughts on that, Chris?
No, I just would love to continue to grow that, because we've gotten some of our best ideas for shows and guests from that. And I would love to you know, get some people more active in there, and maybe even you and I can do an impromptu Zoom call with people. Who knows, maybe even bring somebody on that is inspiring us in the network to be a guest on the show. I mean, there's been some awesome people that have really taken the reins, and obviously you and I moderate and post most of the content, but I mean, I've been, you know, super impressed by, you know, people just making observations in their life about you know, tackling things and, you know, being healthy, and kind of the anti-Facebook, if you will.
Yeah, I like that, the anti-Facebook. Yeah, I would agree. Definitely top shelf folks, and definitely worth investing a little bit of time looking into that. So I guess that's let's wrap for tonight, Chris. And next week it'll be the final part of the 30 major causes of failure. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, sounds great. Me too. Looking forward to it.